Hi everyone, I'm Tim Nguyen, and you're listening to Soundtrack Alley.
Hello, I am Randy Andrews, and today I'll be discussing the amazing movie Gremlins from 1984. The film was directed by Joe Dante and written by Chris Columbus. I'll discuss the cast, the background, the technical aspects, and of course, the amazing soundtrack by Jerry Goldsmith. It's all today on Soundtrack Alley. Gremlins is an amazing 1984 film that actually came out the same day as Ghostbusters. There are three rules you must follow, though. Don't feed the gremlins after midnight, don't get them wet, and don't shine light on them. We just need to remember that. Today, I'll talk about the cast first, and then some background and technical aspects. Then I'll get into the soundtrack on the film. I hope you can enjoy it. And first, let's talk about the cast.
Tra-la-la-la-la.
Oh, thanks, Dad.
You're going to like this.
What is it, a birdcage?
No, don't shake it. We're going to have to open it now. It won't wait till Christmas.
It's a puppy, isn't it? Yeah, it is. I can tell.
It's a new car.
At least one of Phoebe Kate's screams in the scene of Dory's Tavern is genuine. An enormous cockroach crawled out in front of her during one take. The scene in the department store where Stripe attacks Billy with a chainsaw was not in the script. It was added by Joe Dante and Zach Gallion as an homage to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Zach Galligan recounted in an interview that when the movie was made, there was no CGI, so all the gremlins were animatronics, each costing between $30,000 and $40,000. When everyone left the lot for the day, security would have everyone open the trunks of their cars to make sure they weren't stolen. Mrs. Deagle, the richest lady in town, had named her cats after different kinds of currency, including kopeck, drachma, and dollar bill. Among others, the voices of the gremlins were done by Michael Winslow. Frances Lee McCain, who plays Pelzer's mom, also plays Lorraine's mom in Back to the Future. When Marty goes back to 1955, both films were executively produced by Steven Spielberg. This was also a keynote of Frank Welker suggesting that Howie Mandel perform in this film, and that was unique. Though he followed the basic outline of the script, Hoyt Axton is said to have improvised nearly all of his lines. And Hoyt Axton was always the first choice for Rand Pelzer. Pat Harrington Jr. was also considered. Pat Hingle was said to have delivered the best screen test, but was passed on because it was feared Rand's character would take over the picture as a result of Hingle's excellent performance. Now, Billy said he bought a comic at Dr. Fantasies. Dr. Fantasies is a nickname for executive producer Frank Marshall. Steven Spielberg urged the casting of the relatively unknown Zach Galligan as Billy because he saw chemistry between him and Phoebe Cates during auditions. Galligan later compared himself to Billy, saying he was a geeky kid and that being in the film was really kind of a dream, given what I get to do, what my character gets to do, blow up movie theaters, adding that he got to work with great people. Both Judd Nelson and Emilio Estevez were even considered for the role of Billy. Mushroom, the dog actor who played Billy's dog, Barney, also played Lance Henriksen's dog in the cult horror movie Pumpkinhead. Now, Edward Andrews, Judge Reinhold's, and William Schallert's roles were reduced after the film was edited. John Pertwee and Mako were both seriously considered for the role of Mr. Wing. Now, Billy was originally more of a typically nerdy character and not only traveled around the town with two companions during the madness, a love interest and a bully turned emergency ally, but wielded a sword. Now, Chris Columbus sold Steven Spielberg the script along with the screenplay for The Goonies, but his career didn't take off until the massive success of Home Alone. Kenneth Toby and Belinda Balaski also appeared in Gremlins 2, The New Batch, both playing a different character. In Mrs. Deagle's house, Edward Arnold is shown in a few photographs as Donald Deagle. The permission for their use was granted by his estate. The picture of Rockin' Ricky Ralto is a picture of Don Steele. This was also the film, the last film of Scott Brady. K.A. Luke had remarkably young-looking skin and had to be made up to look older than his real age at the time of filming. He was in his mid-80s. Judge Reinhold and Phoebe Cates starred together in Gremlins, but they also starred together in Fast Times at Richmond High. Now, a unique cameo appearance was Chuck Jones. Now, he was the Warner Brothers animation legend that makes a brief on-screen cameo in the scene with Billy and Gerald trading insults. Now let's talk about the background on the film. The theater that blows up was subsequently involved in another accident when Marty McFly, in Back to the Future, smashes into the front entrance at the end of the film. The theater then burned down with the rest of the buildings in the fire that happened right after the filming of Back to the Future Part 2. The set for Kingston Falls is the same one used for Back to the Future, and both movies were filmed in the Universal Studios backlot. One of the studio notes to director Joe Dante and producer Steven Spielberg on seeing the first cut was that there were too many gremlins. Spielberg suggested cutting them all out and calling the film People. In Cantonese, Mogwai means devil, demon, or gremlin. The Mandarin pronunciation is Mogwai. This film and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom are credited with inspiring the MPAA to create the PG-13 rating. Many felt movies were too violent for a PG rating, but not violent enough for an R. The Time Machine prop from The Time Machine in 1960 can be seen behind Rand Peltzer when he's on the phone with his wife while attending the convention. A moment later, the machine has disappeared into the future or the past, to the astonishment of several onlookers. Also attending the convention are Steven Spielberg, Jerry Goldsmith, and Robbie the Robot. At the start of the film, the cinema in the town is showing A Boy's Life and Watch the Skies, which were the working titles for Steven Spielberg's E.T. the Extraterrestrial and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. The Santa speech proved to be controversial and studios executives insisted upon its removal because they felt it was too ambiguous as to whether it was supposed to be funny or sad. Joe Dante stubbornly refused to take the scene out, saying it represented the film as a whole, which had a combination of horrific and comedic elements. Steven Spielberg did not like the scene, but despite his creative control, he viewed Gremlins as Dante's project and allowed him to leave it in. After watching Tim Burton's earlier short film, Steven Spielberg considered him to direct the film. He decided against it because, at the time, Burton had never directed a full-length feature film. Originally, Stripe and Gizmo were the same character. Steven Spielberg insisted one of the gremlins be a good guy that the audience could identify with. Little to no actual dialogue for the gremlins and Mogwai exists in the script itself, in addition to several instances of on-set rewrites, changing or adding to much of the script. The voiceovers were mostly ad libs, repeating snippets of just performed dialogue or in reaction to other sound effects or environment. To this end, Howie Mandel recorded Gizmo's lines phonetically for foreign dubs of the movie, where localized dialogue and in-jokes helped make the picture successful with audiences worldwide. The original script contained a scene where the gremlins attacked a McDonald's, eating customers instead of the burgers. An earlier attempt to have monkeys play the gremlins was abandoned because the test monkey panicked when it was made to wear a gremlin head. When the filmmakers were making this, they had the idea to use Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs as a film to be shown in the theater because Disney released it on December 21, 1937, as a holiday movie event, since this story took place during the Christmas season. When Billy leads Pete up to his room to show him Mogwai, a rolled-up movie poster for Twilight Zone the movie can be seen standing on end against the wall. Joe Dante directed one of the episodes for that film a year earlier. There are also many connections to Steven Spielberg's other popular movie, E.T. the Extraterrestrial. One of the gremlins says, "Phone home," there's a stuffed E.T., and at the beginning, one of the movies on the marquee is A Boy's Life, which was the fake name E.T. was shipped as to theaters. In this film, the Amblin Entertainment logo makes its first on-screen appearance. And originally planned and scheduled for a Christmas release, the film was rushed into production shortly after Warner Brothers found out it had no major competition against Paramount's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom or Columbia's Ghostbusters for the summer movie season. Unbeknownst to Joe Dante and Michael Fennell, Steven Spielberg was a big fan of The Howling. After he came across Chris Columbus's writing example, he fell in love with it and bought it. Then he decided that Dante was the guy to make it into the movie, took the project to Warner Brothers, and also produced it with his own company, Amblin Entertainment. In addition to restoring the classic Warner Brothers logo to the opening of the movie, it was hoped to release the film along with the classic Looney Tunes short, Falling Hair, where Bugs Bunny is harassed by a plane gremlin during World War II. This fell through, but highlights from the short do appear as part of the behind-the-scenes featurette that has also been included on the special edition DVD. According to Joe Dante and Michael Fennell, the original rough cut of the film ran 2 hours and 40 minutes. The film references Joe Dante's The Howling with a smiley face image on a refrigerator door. And on the Deagle real estate sign, the hours of operation are only 10:30 to 11:15 Monday through Friday. That'd be a short schedule. Chris Columbus wrote the script for this film and later directed Home Alone. and Home Alone 2 and Lost in New York. And all three films have a video clip of It's a Wonderful Life. The last film to be shot on East Manicolor 125T film stock, and this was discontinued shortly after this film finished shooting. This was also the first movie in years to use the Warner Brothers Shield logo. And with Steven Spielberg, he had a great working relationship with Chris Columbus on the film, and he produced two other films that Columbus scripted. The Goonies, which was in 1985, and it was based upon an idea that Spielberg had, and then Young Sherlock Holmes, which was also in 1985, which was Columbus's idea. Altogether, 3 years were spent working on these three films. While watching Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs on the local cinema, one of the gremlins wears a set of Mickey Mouse ears. The footage of Santa on the roof that Mr. Futterman is watching in his home is of Red Skelton in a Christmas skit from one of his shows. Even though set during Christmas, the film actually was released in June 8th of 1984. Although it's not clearly visible, this film had four magic moves to winning golf by Joe Dante and is on Billy's nightstand, and how Joe Dante Jr. said that his father criticized him for not making the title more visible. After Twilight Zone the movie, this movie marked the second collaboration between Joe Dante, Michael Fennell, and Steven Spielberg. It was also the fourth biggest grossing film of 1984. And also, there's a movie poster for The Road Warrior that's seen near the TV as Billy falls asleep after Mogwai ate after midnight. Ooh. The billboard of Rockin' Ricky Ralto at the start of the movie is done up like Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, which was shown at the Rialto Cinema, and producer Steven Spielberg directed that film. In Young Sherlock Holmes, an inventor, Wax Flatter, builds an invention similar to Rand Pelzer's, like a clockwork egg slicer he never got to patent, a spring-loaded device that turned the pages of a book with a timer that recorded the reader's pace, and a gas-fueled bedside coffee maker. Both films were scripted by Chris Columbus and may reflect his love of inventions, like in the James Bond series, that he and Steven Spielberg are big fans of. The novelization for Young Sherlock Holmes mentions being attacked by something with razor-sharp claws and vicious teeth. This could be a reference to the gremlins of this film. Also, an inventor, Wax Flatter, hallucinates that gremlins sabotage his ornithopter, which is a definite in-joke to this film. Chris Columbus' script went through several different drafts before shooting the script was finalized. His original version had the creatures killing the dog, cutting off the mom's head, and tossing it down the stairs. These elements were never shot due to the fact that both Joe Dante and Warner Brothers wanted the movie to be more family-oriented. In the original draft of the script, instead of Stripe being a Mogwai who becomes a gremlin, there was no Stripe. The Mogwai and Gizmo were supposed to turn into Stripe, the gremlin. Steven Spielberg overruled this plot element because he felt Gizmo was cute and audiences would want him to be present at all stages of the film. This became stressful for Chris Wallace, who had designed the Gizmo puppet only for the actions that happened in the first half of the movie. In the script, Murray Futterman was killed during his encounter with the gremlins, but was changed because the filmmakers found this a little harsh. So during the news report at the end of the movie, if you listen closely to the voiceover, you can hear Lou Landers, an in-joke referencing prolific 1930s-50s B-movie picture director Lou Landers, say that he is going to talk with Mr. Futterman at the hospital. In the novelization by George Guype, this change was not included. Also, we have a cameo of Steven Spielberg as a man in the electric wheelchair at the science convention when Randall is on the phone. The novelization also explains that Mr. Wing's grandson was severely punished by his grandfather for the back alley sale of Gizmo. There was also a deleted scene that shows that Gerald was hiding out in the bank vault while the gremlins ran wild and is losing his sanity. There were other deleted scenes that reveal that Mrs. Deagle was forcing people out of their homes to put down a strip mall, effectively destroying Kingston Falls. In the novelization, she was selling their land to a chemical company, Hitox, of all things. Billy watches Invasion of the Body Snatchers in his room before giving the five new gremlins food after midnight. Invasion of the Body Snatchers is about aliens taking over the whole city, just like the evil gremlins will do later in the movie. The novelization has a scene with the Mogwai, or gremlin, named Earl in the novel. Billy left with Mr. Hansen to study. After Hansen took a sample of his blood, it gets a hold of a sandwich and eats after midnight. After completing its transformation, it takes its revenge on Hansen for the blood test before scratching Billy and escapes into the school's ventilation system. It briefly appears and attacks Billy in the nurse's office before escaping. After that, it disappears and Billy doesn't give it any thought when he goes down to track down Stripe. Now let's talk about a few of the technical aspects on the film.
Can I hold him?
Sure. I don't see why not. He seems to like you.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Sorry. What was in that jar?
Nothing, just water.
Why is he making that noise?
The idea for these creatures was born in a loft in Manhattan Garment District that was home to NYU's film school graduate screenwriter Chris Columbus. By day, it was pleasant enough, but at night, what sounded like a platoon of mice would come out, and to hear them skittering around in the blackness was really creepy, Columbus recalls. Near the very beginning of the movie, as Mr. Peltzer makes his way to the curio shop in Chinatown, a wrecked car is seen with the hood up and smoke coming out of it. The car is an AMC Gremlin. In real life, the AMC Gremlin logo, which is located on the gas tap, bears a striking resemblance to the gremlins featured in the film, except for a more grotesque reptilian appearance. The Gizmo puppets were particularly frustrating because they were smaller and thus broke down more. Consequently, to satisfy the crew, the scene was included in which the gremlins hang Gizmo on a wall and throw darts at him. This was included on a list that the crew created known as the Horrible Things to Do to Gizmo list. And actually, Joe Dante actually prefers Gremlins 2, The New Batch, this film's sequel, rather than the original. During the one-night shoot, problems with the gremlin puppets were so severe that the entire cast fell asleep on the set during the delay. When Murray says we should have gotten a Zenith, it's a reference to the fact that by the 1980s, Zenith was one of the few electronic brands still manufactured in the United States. Chris Wallace suggested they use puppets instead of the proposed stop-motion idea. As a compromise, the studio suggested a spider monkey in a suit, which was tested at Joe Dante's office. The animal went crazy, tearing the office apart and defecating everywhere. Dante screamed at the trainer to get the animal and then asked Wallace, "So, puppets?" Which is great. The official comic strip adaption included scenes that were not in the movie, including Billy's mother asking if the Mogwai was a rat, followed by the Mogwai using Rand's bathroom buddy, thus earning the name Gizmo. There was also more emphasis on a subplot of Miss Deagle trying to buy up everything in the town, a scene of Billy finding that throwing juice on the Mogwais had no effect on them, and Mr. Hansen's students being more Billy's age, and Gizmo and Kate trying to shut down the fountain and turn on the lights, and Billy smashing Stripe's skeleton with a baseball bat. The term gremlin is a neologism originally coined by Welsh author Roald Dahl. Famous for his somewhat dark children's books, his story Gremlin Lore about fictionous mischievous elves that were said to cause unexplained damage on RAF planes was commissioned by Walt Disney but was never made, which is probably a good thing. The Scottish alternative rock band Mogwai takes their name from this film, ironically. The new Mogwai, which popped out of Gizmo's body as small furry balls, which then started to grow, were balloons and expanded as such. At the beginning of the movie, while on his way to work, Billy says hello to Dr. Moreau, a head nod to the 1896 sci-fi novel, The Island of Dr. Moreau. Steven Spielberg changed the design of Mogwai from moment to moment, greatly upsetting Chris Wallace's workshop. First, he suggested they change the color to brown in white rather than all over brown. Then hairless ears. Then he wanted Gizmo to become more of a sidekick to Billy's hero, doubling Wallace's already overstretched workshop. There was more than one Gizmo puppet, thankfully, and occasionally Zach Galligan, when carrying one, would set him down off camera, and when Gizmo appeared again, sitting on a surface, it was actually a different puppet wired to the surface. Chris's workshop began to understand the premise of the Gremlins creatures when they did the carol singing gremlins, and once they were dressed in human clothing, Wallace exclaimed, "They're parodies of people!" The two swords seen hanging on Peltzer's wall appear to be the same props used in the climactic battle between Buffy and Angel in season 2 finale of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. At the end, Gizmo pulls a window blind that exposes Stripe to the sunlight. Originally, however, there were two window blinds, and Gizmo pulls the first one, and then Billy pulls the second one. This scene was edited because Steven Spielberg believed that Gizmo was the hero of the movie and not Billy, and therefore Gizmo would be the one responsible for the demise of Stripe. After Lynn Peltzer stabs the gremlin to death in the kitchen, there was an unused effect of the gremlin trying to pull the knife free from its body. The effect was considered too distressing and the shot omitted. However, you can see the effect over her shoulder as she microwaves the other gremlin. Mr. Hansen, the science teacher, originally died with dozens of hypodermic needles stuck in his face. However, by request from Steven Spielberg, the shot was redone to include just a single needle in his buttocks. According to Joe Dante, the Mogwai gremlin Earl that Billy left with Mr. Hansen later met up with Stripe's gang and joins in the terrorizing of the town before being blown up with the rest. Now, let's get into the soundtrack portion of the show.
One, two, three, four, 5 million. Now can I have one?
Oh, I don't know, Pete.
Hey, look, that one's got a cute little stripe on its head.
Isn't that incredible, Pete?
Yeah, right.
No, I mean, don't you think this is... it's incredible.
Oh, it is me. I'm serious.
In the bar scene, The video game The Gremlin is, well, in the bar scene, the video game The Gremlin is playing is Star Wars. Within the story, the gizmo was capable of singing and humming. Jerry Goldsmith wrote Gizmo's song as well, but Howie Mandel never sang it. A female member of Goldsmith's congregation was hired to sing Gizmo's song, although she had never worked in films before. Chris Columbus, being a fledgling writer when Steven Spielberg optioned his screenplay about little creatures terrorizing a small-town America, and by the time Amblin Productions filmed Gremlins in 1984, Spielberg and director Joe Dante had transformed the straightforward horror film into something far more comic while retaining some memorable grand guignol moments. A combination of cuddliness, edgy comedy, and shocking violence turned the film into a sensation, rendering it one of the biggest hits of the year. A key element in the film's success was the imaginative meld of traditional orchestral writing and cutting-edge electronics provided by the frequent Joe Dante collaborator Jerry Goldsmith. The music for Gremlins is a fan favorite that has been recognized as one of Goldsmith's most original works. Most of it has never been available in a legitimate release until now. At the center of the score is a ragtime theme played on a synthesizer, a raucous celebration of mayhem that harkens back to the early days of animation, yet gives the music a funky, contemporary twist. This is balanced by a heartwarming lyrical theme for the endearing Mogwai character Gizmo, which doubles as a love theme for the young couple portrayed by Zach Galligan and Phoebe Cates. An off-kilter waltz theme for Polly Holiday's modern-day equivalent of The Wicked Witch of the West may be Goldsmith's most outrageous comic confection. Solo fiddle invokes the devil, as in Herman's The Devil and Daniel Webster, eerie bells, which are both acoustic and electronic, and this invoked the mystery of the Mogwai, and pulse-pounding action music aptly supports the wild physical antics of the destructive creatures. The music produced is absolutely a unique blend of comedy and dark moods. For the Gremlins score, Goldsmith conjured up what on paper seemed like a weird concoction. The core of Goldsmith's score is a traditional orchestral one, but it has substantial support in many places from synthesizer sounds. Its mood swings between comfortable family fare with a cute animal theme and a sprinkling of comedy and a dash of Christmas carols on the one hand, while towards something horribly demonic on the other, which is manic, hence ragtime, a devilish violin, and strangely disturbing electronic sounds. Yes, it's a strange mix, but it suits the movie perfectly, and hearing the music in isolation will easily conjure up scenes from the movie. Gremlins is one of those movies where the background and foreground music blend together at times. Gizmo and the Gremlins sing their own themes on screen, but mostly their themes are simply part of the background score. Gizmo's theme is often heard on a synth. It's a cute theme suitable for a cuddly creature. Slightly alien, but its vibrato has warmth. The first few tracks of the album quote most of the main themes. After a brief hint of the Gremlins' rag, Late for Work is a busy theme which establishes the town and its snowy landscape as people go about their business. Then Miss Deagle, with her dog, establishes a major comedy element of the score. It plays using another synth sound, but it has a buzzy synth brass supported by some low solo strings. We're left in no doubt that she is a nasty figure of fun, so we will later side with the Gremlins when she gets her comeuppance. The next few tracks are full of Gizmo's theme as Billy gets to know his new friend, but then things take a new turn in Spilt Water. Although the track ends with a version of the Gremlin's rag, there's a new sound effect like an angry cat. It's something feral and animalistic, and we hear this sound effect more and more through the movie. And there's also moments of light relief in the score, and the composer uses some chimes to help anticipate more rule-breaking in Snack Time and The Wrong Time. But then things get out of hand, and Goldsmith brings out this dark theme for the Gremlins, and there's these little touches of the Gremlin rag that are underlined by beating timpani as a newly hatched Gremlins cause mayhem in the kitchen. Now, from that point onwards, the rag gets more dark as the Gremlins go on this rampage. And meanwhile, Kate tells her story about why she doesn't like Christmas, and we hear a sad but disturbing version of Silent Night. For the theater escape, Goldsmith lets rip with some Stravinsky-like irregular beats, followed by pizzicato strings, and then more electronic menace building up to the final confrontation. A new heroic theme enters the mix when Gizmo's steely determination becomes apparent, and the cute bundle now takes the lead in dealing with Stripe, whose rag theme dies away with comic sound effects as he meets his gooey end. In the aftermath, the chimes return as Billy must face up to his lack of responsibility, and Gizmo's theme is picked up by the strings as he says goodbye to his new friend. It's not until the end titles that we hear the full rendition of the Gremlin's rag, complete with synth toms and the feral sound effects. So today I'll be playing some cues from the score. First I'll play Fanfare in C, The Shop, and The Little One, then Spilt Water, and then The Lab, Old Times, and Snack Time, The Wrong Time. These really show the wide variety of music pieces that Jerry Goldsmith was able to work with, and it was a real challenge for him to work with this specific movie. I hope you enjoy these.
Thank you.
Next, I'll play Kitchen Fight, High Flyer, and Too Many Gremlins. With each of these cues that I play, you can almost hear the weird sounds that Jerry Goldsmith uses to simulate the sounds of the gremlins and the polar opposite of Gizmo. It even forms into a traditional gremlins theme, heightening the horror aspect of the film, even when it's supposed to be whimsical and fun. I hope you find these enjoyable.
Thank you.
So sadly, we've come down to another end of Soundtrack Alley. I'd like to thank Alexander Shebell for the excellent intro he's provided today. Check out his work at xanderscores.com. So lastly today, I'll be playing Theater Escape, Stripe is Loose, Toy Department, and No Gizmo, then Fountain, and Stripe's Death, and finally, End Title and the Gremlin Rag. So thanks for listening, and check out my podcast on soundtrackalley.net, soundtrackalley.podbean.com. Find me on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at RandallAndrews1. You can also email me at soundtrackalley@yahoo.com. And I hope you all have a pleasant day. Until next time, happy listening. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. I hope you take the time to review my podcast on iTunes or even listen to it on Podbean. With your review, it helps me get noticed on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley Spotlight. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Also, if you want to leave a comment, question, or concern, please email me at soundtrackalley@gmail.com and enjoy looking at my blog at soundtrackalley.com.